Welcome to episode 59 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. This is Eric Barzeski. Jack and Jeff are both here this week. Hello.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Not as well as Zach Johnson, who has backed up his Masters win by adding a second tour win this year and a third overall. Of course, winning a tournament he won before, the AT&T Classic, formerly the Bell South Classic, I believe, in Georgia. So Zach Johnson winning in a playoff over Ryuji Yamada, but all three tour victories thus far in the state of Georgia. Jack, your thoughts? You weren't terribly enthused this week, huh?
Well, you know, among the top 50 golfers in the world, I think only 11 were in this event. So it kind of was a yawner to me. I watch it because I know that I'm going to have to talk about it on the podcast.
But you're dedicated, man. You are dedicated.
I am dedicated, but you know, it was a sleeper. I even had a tough time getting the redhead excited about it, even if there was a playoff. I mean, on the one hand, you know, to get serious, I think Johnson validated his status on the tour. Yeah, there you go. But on the other hand, you know, so what? So what? I had the same opinion of this tournament as I do of the FedEx Cup, and that's a whole other story we won't get into right now.
And I was in and out of the tournament. I watched off and on throughout all 4 days. I think I caught the highlights maybe on Thursday night. But for me, I really enjoyed the last several holes. I came in about holes, you know, 15, 16 in the afternoon, and I enjoyed it. I mean, it was a bit of a nail biter for me. I enjoyed that final stretch, and then, you know, to see Zach Johnson there again, I was kind of rooting for him. Then Yamada, I thought Manny played great, solid golf down the stretch. His chip, what was that, 17 or 18? I mean, 18. He just showed poised. 18, right. He just showed poised.
I mean, he missed a 4-foot putt on 17 that would have given him the win with this birdie on 18.
Yeah, would have given him the win. But, you know, I thought it was a good finish. Obviously, I kind of felt the same way Jack did. It was a little more boring, especially the first 3 days without anybody, without many big names in the field. But I did enjoy that finish.
All right, well, like I said, Ryuji Yamada got into a playoff. Zach Johnson started well back, really. 3 shots back, I believe, starting the day. But I kind of figured he would pull it out. Almost took the same approach as he did at the Masters, playing ahead of the leaders, ahead of the final group. Played solid, steady round of golf. Got birdies where he could. And got into the clubhouse and posted a number. And nobody could, well, one person met it. But not many people could really get to it. Troy Mattison had a chance to get into it. But literally bladed a ball out of a fairway bunker into the, you know, it embedded in the turf wall. Ball in front of it. He got a free drop out of that, which I don't quite understand. It was not a fairway height or lower area. So unless they had a local rule saying free drops anywhere for an embedded ball, the announcers didn't make mention of that. I found that odd.
That was very odd.
You don't get a free drop for an embedded ball unless it's fairway height or lower, i.e. green, fringe, or fairway.
Correct.
Under the rules of golf. So I found that very odd that he would get a free drop, but he dropped. He was not in a great position. And then he hit it out, and he still wasn't in a good spot. So
but that was a lackluster swipe at the ball. I didn't think he really took aggressive a swing as he should have. Obviously, that was a really awkward spot, so he was just kind of poking it out of there. But a little more oomph, and that thing would have been sitting better.
Right. And, of course, took a 7 on the par 4. And then Lee Jansen was in it and shot a final round 74. Not really in it. He was playing in the same group as Zach Johnson. So he was a couple back, but kind of fell apart a little bit with a final round 74. He's, you know, playing on sponsor exemptions and so on this year. So an opportunity missed for both he and Camilo Villegas, who put a ball out of bounds and took a 7 on a par 5 that really killed his round after a bogey. So
yeah, even though he wasn't on my fantasy team, I was kind of rooting for him because he's such an exciting kid to watch. And he just, it didn't happen for him. And it was sad to watch.
He gets up there and then seems to fall apart. He's got a little bit of a Sergio streak in him or something.
Exactly.
So.
Well, he doesn't spit in a cup. I got to tell you, I was playing around today with somebody who took about 5 minutes between holes to rip Sergio for the drops the other you know, last week and for the spitting and for the whole thing. And it was totally unprompted on my part. And I just said, you know, right on, bro.
Okay. Lorena Ochoa ended up okay this week. She started the final round a couple back, but now her lead over Annika Sorenstam has grown because she's won the Sybase Classic. Annika, of course, is still sidelined with a back injury. The win was 11th, the 11th of Ochoa's career, and she wins $210,000, or roughly the equivalent that Camilo Villegas won for finishing like 8th.
Yeah. You know, that tournament happened in my backyard. It was probably 15 miles from where I live. And the New York media barely covered it. I mean, Damon Hatfield, the New York Times, was there for the final day. But it was, it just astounded me how little press they got here in the New York market. I mean, you used to be up in Waikagill in Westchester County, and they moved it down to Montclair Country Club, and there was just, it was like there was no hype around here. Nobody knew about it. I would love to know what their gate was, because it couldn't have been that much, and that's very sad.
Easy to get into was their gate.
I guess so.
Of course, the next step for Lorena Ochoa, really, she's got to win a major. She's got to almost, you know, we talk about validation with Zach Johnson. She's almost got to validate that top ranking by winning a major, by coming through when it matters the most.
She does. She does.
At the Burger King AT&T, Jamie Farr owns Corning God knows what on the LPGA Tour Open.
Well, that's exactly, when you look at world's number one, you think of a person who's won some majors, and that's going to be the glaring deficiency on her resume for a while until she does it. Obviously, she's got the game to get it done, and everyone expects her to, and so she's not putting too much pressure on herself. I read in this article that we'll link to that, you know, she's just going to get out there and enjoy her game, and hopefully she's able to do that, because I do believe she has the skill to handle a major.
Well, you shall see. They got three more this year, so plenty of opportunities for her. We'll be right back with some opportunities to discuss John Daly right after this.
I'm working on shortening my swing.
Ball position and alignment.
Not thinking too much.
My first major.
My next one.
Working on getting back on top.
Staying positive after every shot.
Making more putts.
Going lower.
Lower. Even lower.
Finding my caddy.
Just trying to get better every day.
Even the world's best want to be better. That's why there's the new Pro V1 and Pro V1X.
In this week's forum topic of the week, we are talking about the John Daly Report, and Hogan Fan, one of our illustrious dedicated forum topicers, has posted this topic on the John Daly Report. Basically,
my summary is, you know, I mean, they're tracking John Daly and seeing what he's doing all year and stuff. The executive summary, nothing. Not doing much. He's apparently drinking a whole lot. He's withdrawn from tournaments. He played in the AT&T Classic that Zach Johnson won. Withdrew. I really think this is the end for John Daly. We may not see him again. Ever, period, except in a MaxFly commercial where he's drinking a beer and driving a golf cart, if they hadn't pulled it from the air.
Well, what you've seen is all that beer drinking and hard living just catching up with him finally. And it's really pathetic. I mean, it's sorry to see a guy with, everyone agrees that he's got as much talent or had as much talent as anybody on the PGA Tour. But anyway, you know, he's a phenomenal golfer. He's missed five cuts this year, withdrawn three times. That, to me, that's the most disappointing story of his career, really. But then again, this year, I mean, people give him an exemption to come out and play the last event he was at, the AT&T Classic, shoots 77 and withdraws. Well, that, to me, that's just a quitter's attitude. He's got to stay out there, honor the exemption, play hard, see if he can, you know, see what he can do the second day. And that's just unfortunate to me.
He's always been a streaky player, but lately the only streaks have been in his underwear.
Well, you know, the really sad thing is it's watching a train wreck happen, and his mental mindset, you know, his mindset, his lifestyle, you know, his financial obligations. I mean, who wants to wear a shirt that looks like a, you know, a billboard along the highway going into Dallas or someplace, you know?
Right.
You know, it's as Jeff said, it's all catching up to him. And he has this attitude where, you know, I'm talented. I can do this. You know, I don't have to putt on Mondays, I think was one of his quotes when they did some charity thing, you know, this week. It's all catching up. And I, frankly, I don't want to watch.
Right.
I've lost it.
I never really cared to the level that some people did, but so I don't really care a whole lot now. It is what it is. I don't know. It's sad, but eh.
Well, it's very sad. It's very sad, and it's too sad, and it's too bad. I mean, here's a guy who's won two majors. Zach Johnson won two. I think he's won one. And, you know, there's a lot of people that can identify with a beer-drinking good old boy. But at the same time, when you watch somebody's life crumbling around them, that's not pretty.
No, but we'll be fair. It's of his own doing. We're not going to... This isn't a hard luck story by any stretch. You reap what you sow sooner or later.
Yeah, well, I you know, I kind of come at it. I'm a fan of John Daly's personality. I've never been a fan of his drinking and hard living and all that. Again, this is pretty much, like you said, Eric, you know, you reap what you sow. He's getting what he paid for. And it's unfortunate because he's got a good personality. He's a good personality for the tour. Very popular player even still. But it's kind of, for me, again, it's wearing thin.
All right. We'll be right back with Beating Balls after this message from Titleist. So stay tuned.
Ones, twos, threes, and fours.
But mostly ones.
I never start with a two.
Ones and threes.
I never play higher than a four.
Low numbers.
I like ones.
Anything but ones.
Fours in the final round.
These ones on Thursdays.
Twos on Fridays.
Threes on Saturdays.
And fours on Sundays.
Five, six, seven, or eight.
Whatever my caddy hands me.
Threes.
Anything but a three.
Nines.
Any number.
Any number.
Any number. As long as it's Titleist.
Whatever the number, more players trust Titleist than all other golf balls combined.
Welcome back. First here, just a quick beating ball segment here. Tiger Woods has had a second LASIK eye surgery. He had his first, of course, in October 99 after the Ryder Cup, won the Disney Classic, his first event back. Lately, he's worn a lot of sunglasses and stuff on the course, and people started to be like, oh, is he just, I don't know what, allergies maybe? No, apparently he had LASIK surgery just after the Masters, so that could be a part of the cause of that, the wearing of more sunglasses lately. He said, my vision started slipping.
Well, no kidding.
I'd like to know from some of our listeners who might be LASIK surgeons, is when does one burn their retina out, and when does one stop having these surgeries?
Yeah, pretty soon he's not going to have a retina, right?
Well, I've known some ophthalmologists, and I understand, you know, the cornea, you know, he's nearsighted, like as I am, for that matter, and your cornea keeps wanting to grow out, which makes you nearsighted. You know, the LASIK, you know, cuts these slits in the cornea so that it regresses and gets flatter, so you get back to normal vision. But I am with Jeff. You know, I wonder how many times can you do that? Here he is. How old is he? What, 30s?
Right. 31. 30s.
31, you know, and he's gone through two of these already. I mean, I wonder, I think it's a great question. Please, somebody out there answer it for us.
I wonder if you could get like a little grid put on your eyes so that you can help line up putts and stuff. It'll be just like the video game. You have like a putting grid. Be awesome.
Didn't you review a set of glasses like that a while back, Eric?
Oh, yeah.
That didn't work?
We won't talk about those. Yeah, you can get a grid. Or you have a built-in plumb bob right on your eye.
At some point, he's got to be looking at contacts or something, because, you know, he is very nearsighted, and or reasonably so. And I give
him the benefit of the doubt, though. You know, obviously, he's got enough money to hire the right people to tell him what he needs to hear. It seems to be working pretty good for him.
One quick thought here. Is his commitment to a second LASIK surgery an admission that he's in this for the short haul, and by the time he's 40, he's done?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so. But, I mean, LASIK surgery is too new to know what the long-term effects really are, so I don't think we can draw any conclusions for that.
Not without an ophthalmologist on board, and none of us are one.
No.
Yeah.
Next story here, Maria Sharapova was asked to list some of her top 10 mixed doubles partners. Number 6 included Adam Scott. Uh-huh. So, yeah, that's all. We will not make a bigger deal out of this than just that. Maria Sharapova thinks Adam Scott is cute, apparently.
Wow.
And one of the few.
Sam's restraint.
And one of the few professional athletes taller than her.
I did not know that. Now I do. Finally, last here in Beating Balls, my bottom 10. Gary Van Sickle. We're going to talk about Gary Van Sickle's bottom 10 this week. Number 10 is the FedEx Cup. I'm not sure if 10 is bad or better than one.
It's the least of the worst.
The least of the worst. Okay, well, the FedEx Cup is number 10, so I don't know. Since the President's Cup is number 9. You know, I mean, I like the President's Cup, if for no other reason than that it has equally sucky people, since most of the people in the President's Cup teams are PGA Tour players, whereas most of the people in the Ryder Cup play a lot more on the European Tour. So we have equally sucky people, so the matches are closer in the President's Cup.
Right.
Yeah, and how rude, unfair, and whatever to make, you know, Mickelson and Woods and all the top U.S. players play year after year in these cup events. You know, this is another Fincham invention.
It's the only event from which they make money. They don't make money on any of the majors, and they don't make money on the Ryder Cup. So, I mean, I can see why they wanted to do it. Whether or not it's fair is a discussion for another time. But other items on his list include John Daly. We talked about him already. Champions Tour. It's practically just a rumor these days.
You know, and I got to admit, as a senior player myself, and, you know, I turned it on Sunday night, and Carol said, "We don't have to watch this, do we?"
It's bad.
It's,
I mean, they get the Golf Channel's B team to cover it, so you know it's bad. I mean, the Golf Channel's A team isn't that great. So when the B
The B team is on the Nationwide Tour. Oh. The C team is on the Senior Tour.
There you go. Michelle Wee is number 6 here. The International, you know, I don't feel bad for the International. You know, it's supply and demand. It's a market condition, whatever. It was the week before the PGA Championship. Tournaments fold sometimes. I mean, do you agree? Do you disagree?
I agree. Of course, tournaments fold sometimes. We've seen seen a lot of that already this year. And, hey, that's just all part of it. It is a business-driven product, and that's just the way it's going to be.
Dems to brakes.
But at the same time, I think it was a conspiracy to get Tiger Woods under the schedule with his own tournament. And I think the Times had a story about that whole dynamic and how troublesome or threatening that could be.
Well, that whole article was written, I think you're referring to the one by Selena Roberts or something. Right. And she couldn't even get the difference between the PGA Tour and the PGA, right? So it's tough to say how much credibility you can really give to her and that article.
But I think Beckers was right to give it up.
Oh, he's right to give it up. I don't know if he was right to complain about it and point the finger at Tiger and blame him for never coming to his tournament. He's an independent contractor. If you want him to come to your tournament, figure out a way to get him there. You know, like I said, it is what it is. Annika Sorenstam's number 4. The Masters is number 3 on his list, so getting up near the top, he thinks it was boring. We pretty much agreed. Byron Nelson's record is number 2. Okay. And Tiger at the Masters is his top item, his top bottom 10 item. That rounds up the list. You can, of course, read more at the article linked to in our podcast show notes. Do you guys have anything in conclusion to say this week?
Hey, it has been an absolute joy, as it always is.
Yeah, it's one of the thrill of my lifetime.
Okay, smart asses. Whatever I pay you, it's too much.
Right. Double it.
This from the volunteers of thesandtrap.com was episode 59 of the Golf Talk podcast, again brought to you by thesandtrap.com. Check our show notes out online at sandtrap.com on Wednesdays for links to everything we talked about. Of course, send feedback to us, whatever. Download the show, pass it on to your friends. You can't pirate it because it's free, but go ahead and try. Again, for episode 59 and for Jack and Jeff, this is Eric saying so long for now. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you next time.
Hey, goodbye.